Welcome, everybody. It is a brand new episode of the Slasher Sanitarium. I am your host, Troy. Let's get right into this. Today, we are traveling back to the year 2000, a year when Devon Sawa was still alive. Rest in peace, brother. And you could still make a movie with a plane crash in it that didn't make people stand up and scream USA in the theater. This marks the beginning of not only the Final Destination franchise, but also a series on the Final Destination franchise. So let's talk about the name first off. Final Destination works for this movie because it's about a plane crash. Naming every movie after this Final Destination doesn't make that much sense. You could have done Final Car Ride, Final Roller Coaster Ride, Final whatever the fuck happened in the fourth one. But instead we get a series of movies with a title based on airline speak that only features two plane crashes, both of which happen in this movie. So let's get into it. We start with the New Line Cinema logo with some ominous music over it. The storm is raging as we get the title card for Final Destination. There's going to be a shit ton of rain in this movie. I think their entire budget was based solely around we need to get as much rain into this movie as we can. We see a skeleton hanging as Devon Sawa's name flashes next to it. A fan is going as we see Ellie Larder's name and Keir Smith as well. Alex drops his boarding pass and passport onto the bed. We see him grab a touring France book that he keeps next to Death of a Salesman. This is going to continue to happen throughout this movie because we get a ton of creepy imagery throughout this and a ton of just slap you in your face omens and some puns and things like that as well, just based around death. We get it. The movie's about death. Thanks. From this beginning, you would think that we're fighting the devil instead of death itself because there's just a ton of Christianity symbols in it, a ton of references to the devil. There's going to be a couple of them throughout the movie as well, but as far as I know, not the same person. So, anyway, back to the movie. Alex's mother and father enter his room, as he is packing. His dad asks him how the suitcase is working out, and his mother tries to tear off the boarding slip attached to it. Alex stops her and says it's bad luck since the last flight didn't crash. Morbid, but sure, I'll go with it. She decides to be a cunt and tears it off anyways. Absolutely no reason to. It can get torn off by the flight attendant when he gets there, or she could just strap it around it. There's no fucking reason for her to do this shit, especially when your kid just said, hey, it's bad luck. Maybe he's a little bit nervous about flying on a plane. Dad gives us exposition, like a shit ton of exposition. He tells us exactly what the trip's about. He's like, you're going to France for 10 days as part of a class trip, and all your friends are going to be there. And this guy's going to be there, and our lawyer's going to be there too. He says you got your whole life ahead of you, and Alex reacts like his dad just said he was adopted. Nighttime in Alex's creepy bedroom is seen. Torrential winds flow through his room, and he wakes up to someone saying his name. But his fan wasn't on! His clock, which reads 1 a.m., flashes to 1:80, which is the flight that is about to blow the fuck up. Oh, spoiler alert. We cut to Carter, who will not only be a dick, but will be called a dick a couple of times in this movie. He proceeds to be a dick to Hitchcock, a.k.a. Sean William Scott. We see Clear, played by Ellie Larder, as well as Alex and Todd, whose name I never bothered to learn because he's nobody actor, and Alex's brother, who was in that one TV series that you might have remembered back when you were younger, but I don't know who he is anyways. Not sure why Todd and his brother are both on this flight. Are they the same age? Are they both in the same French class? It doesn't seem like it makes sense because Todd's brother doesn't understand what the teacher is saying, and if he was in the French class, you would assume he would at least know a little bit of what he's saying. Frenchie gets everyone's attention. He wants someone to translate what is being said over the loudspeaker. Now, I have no clue why they are speaking French over the loudspeaker in an American airport, but they're speaking French over the loudspeaker in an American airport. And Clear gives us the translation, which is simply just like that we don't allow anything or whatever like that. Like, that's not something that you need to play in French, and only in French and not in English. We get Alex checking in, and the departure board starts to flip a shit ton. The flight desk lady slaps on a new tag saying final destination and remarks that his birthday and his departure time are the same. Alex reacts as if she just said that there's an anvil that's about to fall on your head. He turns back to the departure board and it continues to be fucking crazy, and then it suddenly breaks. So again, none of this really makes sense. Alex will continue to do this throughout the rest of the movie, reacting as if everything is being like, you're gonna die, motherfucker, it's gonna happen this way. His reactions just don't make a lot of sense, and like, if somebody started reacting this way, it'd be like, dude, are you okay? Like, do you need to sit down? Do you need to talk to somebody? You mean you need a hug? I don't know. And also, this movie can only take place back in this time because departure boards are all done, you know, by a computer now, and they don't have those crazy flippy little boards like that. So I have no idea if this actually happens, and this is how they change the boards, that, like, everything just goes fucking crazy for a couple of minutes or what. So, back to the movie. Some unfortunate-looking redhead gets a few lingering seconds of screen time before we see Hitchcock notice that Carter's heading his way. Carter shoves him, and we get dick count number two. Claire drops her book and Alex shoves it right in her fucking face. She looks at Alex as if he just slapped her in the face with his cock. Because she looks and there's a picture of a car crash. Most people would just be like, okay, it's a picture of a car crash. I'm not getting on a car, I'm getting on a plane. Again, the characters just reacting to stuff that's supposed to be ominous, so the audience thinks it's ominous, really takes you out of this movie. Also, fuck you, I may not be a genius, but I get a picture of a car crash supposed to be an omen for bad shit. You don't need to have fucking Allie Larder be like, ah, means we're all gonna die. Todd runs up and asks Alex to come take a shit with him. I can honestly say I have never made this request to anyone of any sex, any race, ever. Todd goes on about twerking a wicked cable and leaving a bad impression for some hot chicks. Cut to the bathroom and John Denver is playing. Alex reminds the audience that John Denver died in a plane crash, in case you're watching this in 2017 and have no idea who the fuck John Denver is. I feel like an airline would screen its musical choices to eliminate these kinds of things, but then again, this is the same airline that doesn't bother to translate its own French spoken over a loudspeaker when you know that there's going to be tons of American tourists who don't speak French getting onto their plane. Back to the boarding desk and Hitchcock is missing. Slow motion ripping of a ticket, everyone is heading to the plane. Alex sees that the plane looks kind of fucked up, then looks down and sees a shuttle truck with 666 on it. So again, devil? Death? Who's the bad guy in this movie? They see a screaming baby on the plane and a handicapped person on the plane. An oddly delivered line from Todd's brother, who says, "Be a fucked up guy to take down this plane." This is the only line that he doesn't get a lot of lines in this movie. But this line, he sounds completely different than the rest of them, and I'm thinking it was almost 80 yard. So it's happening. So I guess God is fucked up in this universe because, yeah, it's happening. Alex arrives in row 25. He buckles his belt and turns on the air. The two, at this point, I'm going to use quote fingers. I know you can't see that I'm going to use quote fingers, but here we go. The two hot chicks ask if they can switch with Todd, who gives them an excuse about a urinary tract infection. So the guy worried about people smelling his shit doesn't care if people think his piss tube is fucked up? Total sense. They bail out and go to ask Alex. Alex looks out the window to see the plane wing looking kind of scorched. I've been on 4 airplanes in my life. None of them looked this bad, but none of them also looked pristine, so not that big of a deal. The girls ask Alex to swap, which would put Alex and Todd next to each other, but Todd seems not to want to him to switch, so he can just creep on one of the hot girls. Todd also makes a choking motion, thus foretelling his eventual death. Spoiler alert. Alex says yeah and moves up by Todd. Alex says something like, "Did you really think you were going to titty fuck them over Greenland?" I had to rewind this twice in order to catch exactly what he said because it's very quick and it's kind of spoken under his breath. Alex's new seat comes equipped with a broken tray table. And Billy Hitchcock arrives. Alex starts to freak the fuck out, and the plane begins to depart. Alex looks out the window to see the exact same view of the wing he had 10 rows back. Interesting. Abraff, the French guy, says something to everyone and they all clap. Don't know what it was. Doesn't seem to fucking matter. Billy is mowing down on a bag of Whoppers. That's kind of a dick move, considering that you're in takeoff, so you should definitely not have anything that you could potentially spill, considering the plane is not leveled out. Plane starts to rock, and the flight attendant with terrible hair no-sells it. The plane calms down for a second, and everyone sighs of relief. This flight is like 4 to 10 hours. I don't know. I didn't fucking do the math. You can't sigh in relief after just like one little thing, like, oh, okay, now the rest of the flight's going to be fine. And without warning, the plane again begins to rock, and this time, a gnarly flight attendant looks rather concerned, and you hear the sound of some metal bending. Billy drops his Whoppers. Oh, damn. Todd starts screaming like a madman as bags fall from the overhead compartment, and now everyone is screaming. Oxygen masks drop down. A bunch of shit hits some random woman in the face, who is sitting next to Val Luton, as an explosion goes off. The first few rows are engulfed in sparks and flames, so I guess there goes Frenchie. The side of the plane rips open and ejects two unlucky fuckers. Another dude gets sucked out of the side, and Val tries to grab the hand of the person sitting that is slated next for ejection. This person, of course, is strapped to, let's call it a conservative 300 pounds of metal and chair. But, yeah, go ahead and try to grab her, see how that works out. Then, you know, she proceeds to, yep, she's gone. A 1980s boombox claps Todd in the dome piece. Alex rips his mask off as another explosion rips a few people to mush. Like, literally, like, I don't know where this explosion came from, but a couple people just, like, all over the place. Flames engulf the plane and slowly burn off Alex's face. So at this point, we didn't actually see the order of which people died. Seemed like, to me, a ton of people died at the same time. We didn't actually get, like, specifically this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, or actually see any of them die other than Alex getting his face melted off. So a bit of a cheat of them, on the movie, but I'll let it slide a little bit, because we're going to get into something a little bit later that's going to make my head hurt. Alex wakes up and the hot girls are asking if they can trade seats. Alex runs off and over to Todd, tears the latch off the trade table and jumps out of the seat, and he starts screaming, "The fucking plane is gonna explode." Perfect thing to scream on a plane. Even before, 911, this was not a thing that you would want to scream on an airplane. Alex tries to get off the plane himself, but Carter tries to stop him. Just let him go. Like, just let him go and be like, well, that was fucking weird. And then take off to your, you know, doom. The flight attendants grab Alex. They grab Carter, Terry, I think her name is Terry, and then Billy, who is arriving late, gets also shoved off of them as well. Todd's brother tells him to go check on Alex, and Clear also gets off and follows. Val and Frenchie both get out as well. I didn't actually see Terry get off the plane, but I didn't know she got off. The pilot, who's about to die, says that nobody gets back on the plane. Glorious locks the flight attendant is getting back on the plane as Clear is getting off. Val is explaining that she needs to get back due to the number of students, who are all underage, mind you. Carter tries to attack Alex again. Pilot says one of them can go back on. So Frenchie says he will stay, and Val says he should go. If she was just going to stay, she should have left with, "Hey, Frenchie, get back on the plane. Don't worry, I got this." Instead, she's like, "I'm not going to let one of us back on a plane. I'm going to have you offer to stay, and then I'm going to turn around and be like, no, I'll stay because I'm that good of a person." Billy tries to get back on the plane, but it is rejected. The plane is taking off, and everyone is pissed at Alex, at this point for good reason. This will be the last time that everyone can be pissed at Alex for good reason, though. Val asks Alex what happened, and he goes into what he saw. Carter says they blew a half a day in Paris. Oh boy. Well, let's just get into this line right here. The lady at the desk said that it was a 9:25 flight. Val says that they can get back on the 11:45 flight, which is 2 hours and 20 minutes, or half a day if you're Carter. 2 hours and 20 minutes is what this cost you. So, is it really that big of a deal? Especially considering the only person that you wanted next to you on the plane is sitting next to you in the seat right now and will be on that plane as well. Billy watches the plane take off and security pulls Alex off of Carter again. You know, if you keep doing this shit, you're not going to be allowed on the next flight either. Which, of course, is 2 hours later. Billy is watching the flight, but we don't see any of that sign of the plane exploding shit. All we see is the plane exploding into a big ball of fire. I was really hoping that we'd see some people falling out of the side of the plane for a little bit beforehand, but instead it was just boom. Billy has time to scream, oh shit, before the windows of the airport blow out. I don't know if this is something that actually happens. I mean, this was obviously a big explosion, and they did a nice job with the sound wave doing it. But I would assume that the airport windows would be a little bit better, considering that they've got to take a pretty harsh beating from planes going by it all day. Everyone reacts to the plane blowing up. Subtle reminder, Alex just saved everybody's life. The six people in this room are all alive because of him. They look at him as if he just blew up the plane, though. The rest of his movie, remember, everyone is alive because of this guy. I can't say this fucking enough. And everyone fucking hates him for this fact. So Alex correctly says everyone is looking at him as if he caused it, and he asks everybody why they're looking at him as if he caused it, which is a good fucking question. Also, Todd doesn't seem to be all that upset that his brother's dead. He's just kind of like sitting there like, oh, that was weird. Val asks if there are any survivors, which Alex says, how should he know? Well, you know, the plane was going to crash, so not that big of a deal. Claire says he's not a witch. We get Howard Siegel, Air Flight Safety. He arrives, and I guess if he was doing a better job, this wouldn't have happened, but he is also tailed by two FBI agents and, I guess, a janitor? He asks if anybody needs medical attention or spiritual guidance as a woman appears out from behind the black FBI guy. Go check it out. I'll wait. I don't know what she was getting late there, but she kind of just like slid in behind him or just kind of appeared. So my speculation, old lady's a ghost. Val asks if there are any survivors. Howard says the cause of the accident is not yet determined. That's not the question that she asked you. Tuppy White FBI guy clears his throat. He says he is Agent Wayne, I think, and his black friend is Agent Shrek. Did I mention everyone in this movie is named after famous directors? Because they are, by the way. Shrek is talking to Alex. Alex says he got this feeling. Well, you had a premonition, but sure. Okay, now you're saying you've also got feelings with it, too. He then says he saw it happen. Alex apparently said he wished Carter was on a plane. I don't know if I remember hearing that or not, but sure, whatever. Todd finally seems to understand his brother's dead. I forgot how odd this fucker's voice is, too. It's just like, it's kind of grating. I'm glad he's the first one to go, spoiler alert, because it's just, you know. Val is upset because she essentially sent a man to his death. Claire's reason for getting on the plane is that she believed Alex. I'm sure they wrote nutcase and underlined it 3 times in her paper and moved on from her. A bunch of parents come in to hug their kids, but nobody comes for Claire. Todd's dad is mad at Alex, but hey, one of your kids is alive because of him. And if it wasn't for him, both of your kids would be dead. And we cut over to Claire getting a ride home from Alex's family, so I guess the trip is canceled. Claire gets dropped off in the middle of a fucking field and just kind of walks away. Alex arrives back in his room, and at this point I remembered his luggage was on that plane. Everybody's was. So everybody just lost all of their luggage, which kind of sucks. His parents are watching the news as they are sleeping, and we see Alex is watching. The news report says that all 287 passengers are dead. And at this point, I want to remind you that this movie is based on a real flight crash, where a French class was on board, and the reason later that they give for how the plane crashed is the exact reason that this plane crashed. I think it was Flight 800, I want to say, something like that, TWA maybe. So that's where they kind of got the idea for this was, yeah, they heard that there was an entire French class heading over to France, and the airplane blew up. And then from there, you know, a bunch of coke got involved, and this movie came out. Alex reacts as if there is a monster outside when we hear a thunderclap when the news reporter says, exploded. He looks out the window and sees lightning hit the ground, and it takes out the power. Cut to 39 days since the crash when 39 people died. Well, no, 287 people died, but only 39 of them went to your school. So, I guess fuck all of us, those guys. The guy given the invocation could have chosen a better topic, of course, because he continues to talk about death and everything like that. Everyone is still looking at Alex like they hate him. He saved your fucking lives. Why do you hate him? I would be fucking blowing this guy at this point. The survivors of the fight get up with roses to place them on the giant eagle statue that commemorates the 39 people that died. I don't know if I ever had a class of more than like 25 people in my school, but then again, I guess I don't live around the New York area, so... Carter says that just because his name isn't up on the wall, it's a statue, whatever, but that it means that he owes him anything. Carter says he's never going to die, which is a great plan for life. Billy runs up to Alex and says he took his driver's test last week and he got a 70, the lowest score you can get and still pass. Says the driving instructor said to him, "Young man, you're going to die at a very young age." Billy proceeds to ask if this is true. Alex says, "Not here, not now, not ever." Again, he will eventually die. In fact, he's going to die in, like, a couple of weeks. Billy then asks to if he asks out Cynthia Passer, will she say no? So apparently Alex is a magic 8-ball now. Alex kind of blows him up, but here's the thing. Billy's actually treating you nice, bro. Don't be so angry at him. He's not picking fights with you like Carter. Yes, he thinks that you're a psychic now, but there's worse things he could think of you. Val is bawling, and she says, "Don't talk to me, you scare the hell out of me." Again, why does everyone hate this kid so much? Todd goes up to the memorial. Alex says he misses him, but Todd's father doesn't understand. Todd says once his dad gets over it, they will take a trip to the city and catch a Yankees game. Clear walks up and says that because of Alex, she is still alive and she thanks him. This is the appropriate response. This is what everyone should be doing in this movie. She hands him a flower, and a news reporter, who is a colossal dick, takes a picture. Dick move. Todd is the only one with a terrible New York accent in this movie, by the way. And this movie, of course, does take place near New York, so. Slow walk through Todd's house as he enters his bathroom. Slow pan over to the open window, and again, wind is attacking. That damn wind monster, and just don't let him in. Todd closes the window, but the beast is already inside the house. Todd proceeds to start taking a shit. We see the intake pipe for the toilet start to drip water on the floor. Alex is reading every plane crash book you can rent from the library. So if his idea was to divert suspicion, he's doing a bad job of it. He goes from reading a book about dead people to grabbing a penthouse from his drawer. You do not go from reading about dead people, including dead people you knew, to jerking it. If anyone is watching you right now, that's highly suspicious serial killer fucking shit. Todd proceeds to try to dry shave because he's a fucking moron as water slowly pools on the floor. He sees a shadow behind him. This, of course, is death. This will happen a couple times in this movie. But at this point, I do want to say that the whole thing with death was that the original plan was to have it be an actual... like figure, which is why it kind of covers its tracks on Todd's death. But later on, he doesn't really cover him. It's not supposed to be. Death doesn't cover its tracks the rest of the way. It just kind of tries to make things look like an accident. So change in mid-shooting here on the script. Todd starts to trim his nostrils. So again, this is one of those situations where you're like, well, we know this guy's going to die. We just saw death behind him. He essentially, like, kissed him on his cheek and told him, "I'm coming for you." So you're like, okay, is he going to get stabbed through the face? What's going to happen here? So more water pools as he plugs in the same stereo that hit him in the back of the head on the plane. Seems kind of lazy, prop department. He yanks the cord out once he hears John Denver, which is the appropriate response whenever John Denver's on the radio. He steps back and misses the water. We cut over to Alex, and he's looking back and forth between some tits and clear as an owl slams into his window. He proceeds to chuck the penthouse at the window, and it gets torn up by the fan, which is a waste of a perfectly good penthouse. A small piece lands on his leg. He flips it over, and it says Todd. Now, it says Todd, T-O-D, but as the credits will show you, this is actually the appropriate spelling of this guy's name. His name is T.O.D. Not T.O.D.D. like anybody else in America. T.O.D. Todd. Todd pulls back the shower curtain to show that a small clothesline is up with some undergarments on it. He steps into the water and slips and falls neck first into the line. It wraps around his neck like fucking 7 times, and he falls into the tub. He is now hanging in his shower. His feet can't get any traction because of the shampoo that was spilled in the tub as soon as he fell. It does kind of seem like he'd be able to just like kind of grab the side of his tub and squirm out of it a little bit. But I guess even that, I mean, you're still, you know, got the thing around your neck. He is gagging and clawing at his neck as his eyes burst into red. He turns to see his rubber ducky watching him die with a smile on a smug fucking face. We cut downstairs to see that Todd's dad is asleep. Todd reaches for his scissors, and his feet curl up, and he fucking dies. This is a super realistic death scene, like, complete with really, really awful gagging. Not awfulism, like he does a bad job, but just really, like, disconcerting gasping noises, and, I mean, this is, like, uncomfortable in a movie that's supposed to be like, oh, look at him die, look at him die. So, where are we? The water magically returns to the toilet. This won't make any sense because Death doesn't do this any longer throughout the rest of the movie, but for whatever reason, he wants to cover his tracks here. Alex agrees to see them, Alex arrives to see them loading Todd up into an ambulance. Clear, who's just out by a tree, tells Alex to get the fuck out, and Todd's dad sees Alex and tells him that he caused Todd so much guilt over George that he killed himself. Alex says, why would he make plans for me if he was going to kill himself? Serious moment here. This happens very frequently. People continue to act normal and make future plans, even when they already know when they're going to die. You know, it's a sad reality of it, but it is what it is on that. So I understand. It's fine that this line is in the movie because there are a lot of people who think this. And, you know, Alex is very paranoid right now where he thinks that Death is after him. So it would make sense that he would reject all of it. But anyways, back to making jokes. The FBI guys note that Alex is here, but they don't seem to find it odd at all that Clear is also here. Or, well, she was, because now she's gone. Why was she there, by the way? Is she also getting signs? More to come on that soon. A leaf falls from the tree to show Alex that he has arrived at Clear's. Oh, because we're at the next day. I don't know why I didn't put that. We transitioned to the next day here. She says it's almost autumn, and he makes some crack about it being like July or something like that. I have no idea what this fucking dialogue is doing in this movie. He asks why she was at Todd's. She doesn't answer. She just says that the FBI guys don't know what happened to the plane. He asks again, and she again doesn't answer. Instead shows him a springy head guy. She says it's Alex. And that it's how he makes her feel. So Claire is fucking pretentious. She says she felt what he felt. She didn't see it, but she felt it. So I guess she felt Alex feeling that Todd was going to die. Gosh. Alex says that Death is all around us. Yeah, no shit, buddy. Claire invites Alex to the mortuary. He wanted to see Todd one last time, but I don't think this is what he had in mind. They break in through a stained glass window. Clear kind of flirts with Alex before they break into the embalming area. Todd then jump scares them by his hand flopping. The Candyman arrives and tells them to be quiet or they will wake the dead. Candyman explains away the hand twitch as saying it's just chemicals. Candyman says that Todd was pulling at the wire, which of course they say, well, it was an accident. He says, in death there are no accidents. Starts to go on and on about Death, blah, 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 blah. Alex asks if they can figure out the design, can they cheat Death? Candyman tells him he needs to figure out how and when Death is coming for him. He proceeds to pull a metal pipe from Todd's arm, tells him they don't want to fuck with that Mac Daddy, and proceeds to tell him, I'll see you soon. The next day, and we have Alex and Clear at a coffee shop. Alex pronounces it intercession, which I thought was kind of funny. during his like monologue about omens, he slips the Todd paper to her. And Alex then sees a bus in the windows, but there is no bus on the bus driving on the road. Alex says it still is their time. Carter rolls up with Terry. The music he's listening to is his Final Destination, so go ahead and take a drink. Carter sees Billy and tries to run him over. Another car almost runs Billy over at that point then. So now Carter has almost tried to kill somebody who already went through a traumatic experience where he almost died. Mrs. Luden comes out of the coffee shop as Billy rolls up with, "Carter, you dick!" which is number three. Alex and Carter scream at each other while Terry starts to yell. She says that Carter can just drop fucking dead as she steps out in front of the world's quietest bus. She is splattered all over her friends' faces. Now, I've watched the special features on the DVD of this back when I actually had DVDs. And this scene originally was, they show her body just mangled underneath the bus. So that's why the Alka-Seltzer scene we're about to transition to seems to take a little bit longer, because they're just kind of covering up that spot that they took out. So we get Alka-Seltzer dropped in into water from Alex and from Claire. Claire proceeds to call Alex. Alex's dad wants to talk to him. Alex doesn't want to talk to anybody. The news says a bunch of crazy shit for the reason of the wreck. They show a diagram of where the path of the explosion would have been. He says that they are dying in the order that they would have died, which at this point, I don't understand how he could know when they would have died. When a blast of fire hits them all, it hits them all pretty quickly. And who's to say that Carter doesn't last a few seconds longer than Clear? Who's to say that, like, because the explosion started at one end, those people are going to die before the people at the back of the plane are going to die when the explosion, when that those flames rip through that thing and the whole thing blows up? Essentially, it should kill them all at the same time. But then it wouldn't be a very interesting movie. So he proceeds to figure out that Mrs. Luden is next. I've been calling her Mrs. Luden, but it's Luton, I guess. There's a lot of weird spelling on people's names, but again, the last names are one thing because it's directors. The spelling Todd, T-O-D, just is weird to me. We see a beautiful house that the people who actually lived in this neighborhood in real life didn't want production to destroy because they thought it was such a beautiful house. Mrs. Luden is on the phone with somebody, and she looks out the window to see Alex is just wandering around outside. Luden proceeds to call Agent Shrek. Alex is checking out her car when the agents arrive. They don't believe that Alex is just checking to make sure that it was safe. Now remember that they now have a good theory for what happens, none of which was that a 17-year-old kid blew up a plane. So it seems odd that they're kind of kicking around here, especially considering that, you know, Todd obviously was a suicide. There's no way that Alex would have been able to get into his house with, you know, the dad sleeping downstairs and the fact that he rolls up after the fact. So I'm not sure why they're keeping such close eye on Alex. Alex proceeds to tell him that he thinks Mrs. Luden is next, which is a moronic thing to do because they already suspect you of being a murderer. Mrs. Luden goes through her record collection and says, "Mom's favorite. Nobody's in the room with her. Why are you saying anything?" Of course, I'm talking to a computer screen in a room by myself that is actually dark because I didn't want to turn the lights on, so I guess I'm crazy as well. Of course, the record she grabs is John Denver. The agents proceed to be dicks to Alex. Then Alex sort of threatens the FBI agents. Mrs. Luton starts to make some tea. She wipes off the teapot, and we get shadow death again. A bunch of shots of her knives, as she drops a towel on her knife rack, which is really kind of a dumb move to do. A pesky wind monster blows out her pilot light. She lights a match with dramatic music. The flames go back on. Gotcha, fuckers! She's not gonna die by getting exploded. The agents actually admit that they don't think that Alex blew up the plane, but that and act as if that he killed Terry, but everybody saw that Terry just stepped out in front of a bus. There was four other people that can corroborate the story, plus whoever else was on the bus driver himself too, and anyone else that was in the coffee shop can all tell you that Alex didn't push Terry, he was nowhere near Terry, and Terry just walked in front of a fucking bus. So how did he kill Terry again? Shrek says there are moments that he believes Alex. Which, his white guy says that, You know, he thinks sometimes that Shrek is kind of insane. Back to Belle, and her hot water is ready. She grabs a mug and sees that it is a Mount Abraham High School mug. Now, she just poured this hot water into a mug, so why is she taking a sip of scalding hot water when she has yet to steep her tea into it? This is like instantaneous. She throws a tea bag in, dumps hot water on it, sees the thing is a high school mug, throws the water as she's trying to take a sip. Why the fuck are you taking a sip? She puts the mug back down and it cracks as she pours vodka into it, because you cannot have extremely hot liquid and then quickly dump that out and then put extremely cold liquid in. So it actually makes sense that her mug cracks. She goes walking and pours vodka all over the floor, but she apparently cannot hear any of the vodka dripping. The vodka drips into her computer monitor and it shorts out and starts to smoke. She walks up to it and it explodes and sends a shard of the computer monitor screen into her neck, which, because she's intelligent, she instantly yanks out and drops about a gallon of blood on the floor. She does a little slippy slide in her own blood, and we cut back to Alex, and he is walking when he proceeds to be attacked by burning leaves. I'm not sure how this is an omen for anything other than he has some yard work to do. Cut back to Val, and she is bleeding heavily as her line of vodka catches on fire. It runs all the way back to the stove, and the stove blows up. So death really wants her dead. She's toast already. It severed her artery. She's bleeding all over the place. She's going to bleed out on the floor. Even if Alex gets there and gets an ambulance there, she's fucking dead already. She hits the ground as everything blows up, grabs a towel of her knife collection, a bunch of knives fall, and one of her stabs her in the chest. Really, really fucking wants this bitch dead. Alex bursts in and sees a line of blood. The counter cracks and knocks a chair into the knife, and that proceeds to finally do Val in. All of that fucking worked for her to get killed. Alex grabs a knife out of her, thus assuring him that he will be wanted for murder. He drops the knife instead of wiping it off. Alex goes hauling ass out of there, and we see that Billy is driving past Miss Luton's house. The house explodes, and it sends both of them to the ground. At this point, the FBI agents, who have already shown they're pretty inept, don't seem to notice the fact that, while yes, Alex is at the scene of all of these incidents, so is at least one other person. Like, Terry's death had all of them there. Billy's here. Clear was at Todd's house. Like, he should be looking into it that they've all got, like, a tauntaun or something like that. Alex hauls ass away as Billy sits and watches. The FBI agents ask Clear where Alex is. She says he's not talking to her because she didn't believe him. Billy is riding up to the monument as Carter arrives. He scares Billy and we get Carter, you dick, number 4. Carter pulls out a knife and starts to etch into the statue. And this statue is not like a soft stone or anything like that. Like, he's not going to be able to make any headway on this. Clear rolls up and asks Carter what he is doing. He says he is trying to etch Terry's name into it. Carter says that Clear says that they need to get to Alex because he knows which one of them is next. Carter says that Billy's next, because if he says another word, Carter will kill him. It's kind of a bad time for a joke about it, but shit, sure. Clear sends him down off the trail as she goes searching for Alex. She finds him in 10 seconds. Alex asks if she thinks the flight is still up there, somewhere safe. Clear tells a story about being worried about her parents dying. When she was 10, her dad went into a 7-Eleven to get some smokes and got his face blown off by a robber. Clear's mother married some asshole, and they didn't want her anymore, so, yeah, I guess she's on her own. But she also said something about most people don't have to worry about their parents actually dying, but only one of your parents died. Your mother's still alive. She may not want you anymore, but she's still alive. Carter is driving really fucking fast with Alex in the car now. Carter calls Alex a fucking warlock. Billy says that Alex is prime suspect in the murder because of caramelized blood that is shoe print in and fingerprints on the knife. Carter asks if he knows who is next. Alex proceeds to not say a word, as Carter and Billy both think that they are next. I'm not sure why Alex doesn't just say that Carter is next, and because of that, Carter floors it. He decides to take his life into his own hands, as well as everyone else in the car. He runs a stop sign, which, if death was smart, he would just cause a wreck and finish the job with all of these fucking people. These are the last four people he needs to kill. Just do it now. As they are continuing to go, Alex sees that his seatbelt is broken, and then the next scene, it's not. So another vision. Billy says he fucking hated first class, but he never got into a seat. So, weird line. Carter punches Billy in the face and takes his hands off the wheel. Alex sees a train in the window, and Carter, finally, after almost getting hit a couple times, stops his car on train tracks. The safety bars come down, and the train starts to blow its whistle. Billy is having trouble opening the door. They all bail out, but Carter remains. Carter says, "It ain't my time." But then his car won't start. Carter sees shadow death in his rear view, and his doors lock, and his seatbelt will not undo. Alex grabs Carter and pulls him out of the window, and rips the seatbelt and Carter out of it just as the train hits the car. Billy says, "He really is next," which he was, but now he's not. Now you are. We see that a piece of metal is still left on the tracks. Billy starts crying out that Carter is next, and he's staying the fuck away from him, but yet he's still standing by him. Billy says, "You're Ted, and you ain't taking me with you." At that point, a chain on the train catches a piece of metal and it flies at Billy, taking his head clear off. Billy's body stands tall for a spell before it falls over. Only four times did he call Carter a dick in this movie, which I thought that there was more. That's kind of sad. Also, I thought that this him getting decapitated looked a little bit better, but the effect doesn't quite hold up as well. I mean, they use this exact same effect in like some really bad schlocky movies nowadays, but I thought it looked better in my mind, but apparently, just okay here. Alex gets up and yells, "You should have been next. You should be fucking dead." Carter calls him the devil, which, as we've already seen, I guess we're kind of fighting him too. Alex then goes on about saving Carter and skipping him and getting to Billy. He acts like a fucking lunatic and says he has to see it. "I have to see it. I have to intervene. I have to change the design. That's how I do it." Clear calls Alex baby, so not sure when that happened. We haven't even seen them, like, anywhere near, like, snuggling or kissing or anything like that, but apparently we're on like, pet name basis. Alex says he is next, and then Clear, and they proceed to fuck off. Curious as to how he is going to explain being near a guy who he constantly tormented and is now lying dead, but they leave Carter there to deal with the police. We get Alex trying to death-proof a cabin. His choice of food is a small metal container of either cat food or like tapioca pudding. You know, there are soft items that you can eat. Like, you can go and just get, like, some fucking Jimmy John's or something like that. I don't think that existed back then. You can get something that's not in a fucking small little metal container that could slice your throat. He proceeds to don gloves and eat his gross-ass shit. The wind monster reappears again and knocks over a trash bag. And now Alex is not next, so this is just death fucking with him? Because we know that Clear is next. So anything that happens here is either just a really odd coincidence, or it is literally just death, like, listening and being like, "He thinks he's next, I'm gonna fuck with him." A metal gate blade goes through the door, and Alex thinks that death is trying to kill him with tetanus, which then he calls death a fuck. Clear is at home, and it is raining for the 27th time in this fucking movie. Now, how is she going to know if Alex is alive or not? I guess when she dies, I guess she can assume that he is dead. Clear proceeds to sneak up on the FBI guys. Great job, guys. Alex is rolling up newspaper when he realizes he never moved. And at this point, I'm going to do a little rant. So here's the thing. This makes no fucking sense. So we get a fake out that Alex is next, when I guess it is Clear, because in the real world, Alex never moved seats. But if he didn't have the premonition, he would have moved. In the premonition, he moves seats and thus dies next to Todd, which would make him die before Clear. Now, this makes sense if you think about... This only makes sense if you think of Todd dying earlier when Alex is two seats over and Alex not dying. But whatever. So, but Death's plan is for Alex to move seats, right? Like that's what the whole premonition was, is that this, he's going to move up here. I don't know if at this point Death cares about the timeline of when people die, or if it's just like, I'm going to take all these people out. But that's the whole thing. Alex was going to move seats. I don't think Death looked at like people's, like the seating chart, and was like, this is how people are going to die. If somebody moves, well, then that's on them. I don't think that's the case. Ugh, this makes my head hurt. Alex tries to light a fire, because that won't kill you. Lightning downs a power line outside of Claire's house. Alex runs out as the police arrive. Alex slowly grabs a canoe and gradually gets away. The police proceed to drive off because there's only one place he's going. So Claire should be getting the feeling that she's about to die right now, right? Because that's what Alex feels. Alex gets the feeling, the premonitions, so he should be feeling like Claire's going to die. So Claire should be feeling that Alex is feeling that Claire is going to die. The police roll up as Alex is running through the woods. A pole almost kills Claire, which I'm not sure why it didn't just do that. And instead it stabs to the side of the pool. Alex rolls down a hill and almost gets impaled on a branch. So now Death is just fucking with both of them. It's just going back and forth at this point, but we know Clear needs to die next. The pool explodes and sends water everywhere, and Shadow Death makes another appearance. A tree gets struck by lightning and falls on Alex because he went to the Prometheus school of running away and proceeds to not try to dive out to the side. He's slowly being drowned in a puddle of water as Clear climbs up her boarded-up house. I don't know why her house is boarded up. She... Jeez. Yeah. So Alex gets out from under the tree as Clear almost falls. Clear gets back into her house as every electrical item in her house explodes, which is why you need a circuit breaker. She then hops in a car for some reason, because there's no reason why she couldn't just stay in her house. Once those like sparks dissipate, you're fine. I mean, the power is out on that thing. They're shorted out. Just stay in your house at that point. But she gets into a car nonetheless, and she backs out of the garage. She makes it about 2 feet before she gets stuck, and the mechanism for the garage, for the automatic garage door, falls down and slams into the windshield, and a cable lands on the roof. Alex tells her she is grounded by the tires, and he proceeds to use a metal shovel, to try to knock the cable away. Fire launches under the car. Alex says he can only hold it for so long as it will skip her and it will all be over. Except for the fact that you just realized that you weren't next, and Clear is next. So if it skips Clear, then you are supposed to die. I guess he assumes that if he dies before Clear, that maybe it'll fuck everything over, and Death will just be like, oh, well, no, it just ruined my whole plan. I guess she can live the rest of her life now. Alex grabs a cable and is blown backwards as Clear jumps out of the car. Alex's hands are burned, and Clear says, come on, baby. We have never seen these two have any sort of relationship with each other other than we're trying to keep each other alive. We cut to white, and now we are suddenly walking down a hallway. It is 6 months later, as we get a now blonde Clear, for no fucking reason, Carter and Alex, and they are all departing as they have made it to Paris. They even say they can't believe they ever got on a plane again, and neither can I, because it's been 6 months, and Death, like, just stopped going after Alex? Like, he's supposed to be next. I mean, why is it waiting so long? Why didn't it just blow up this plane, too? Or why didn't he have it where, you know, at any point in time, tried to kill them over the past 6 months? So they toast everyone who has died. Carter says they're the only ones who can understand him. Alex says there's something he can't figure out. He pulls out the plane diagram. He mentions that he intervened for Clear, but nobody intervened on his part. Carter says Alex can still be next. All of this is true. And it seems pretty cut and dry, so I'm not sure why he's having trouble with it, because that was his whole thing, was, well, nobody intervened on me, when I thought that I was supposed to go before Claire, and nobody intervened on me after I thought that I was supposed to go after her. Alex hears that a street musician is playing John Denver. He should be punched. Claire's wine spills and puts a little like blood mark over the B on Alex's sheet. Alex walks off. Claire sees a bus on the window and she calls out Alex's name. So I guess that she's now getting visions. He stops just shy of getting hit. And we would assume this intervenes on his death and allows it to skip over and go to Carter. Getting kind of lazy there, Death. You already tried the bus trick. The bus hits into a parked car, which sets off a Rube Goldberg-type chain of events that causes a neon sign to break off and swing down towards Alex. The neon sign that did read 081 now reads 180. Just before he's flattened, Carter tackles Alex, thus double-saving him? Did he get saved by Clear, or would he have stopped anyways? And did he just get saved by Carter? Because now he's been intervened on twice, so that why did it attack him again? That doesn't make any sense. Because if Clear intervened on him, then it skips him, and it goes back to Carter right away. Thus, him almost getting hit by the sign doesn't make a lot of sense. Carter stands up and says, "I told you you were next." Alex says, "It just skipped me," and Carter asks, "Who is next?" as the sign swings back, and it cuts to black before hitting him, but we hear glass shatter as the credits roll. So, the ending of this, like I said, it gets a little confusing when you try to think of it, you know, because we've got this whole idea of Death's design, and then Death kind of throws it away. But the ending this movie the way they did with Carter getting killed was a nice way to end it. And of course, we will find out that he is actually dead. You don't have to just assume it, because the second one, which we will be reviewing soon, specifically tells you what happens to him and Alex as well. So with that, I will go ahead and say that the Slasher Sanitarium podcast is brought to you by the Questionable Endeavor Network. Visit Question Network for more information on all the podcasts available under the Questionable Endeavor Network banner. Make sure to go to patreon.com/slasherpodcast to support and help keep the Slasher Sanitarium alive, because we have zero patrons. At @SlasherPodcast on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Make sure to continue to like and subscribe us here to get all of the content that I provide for you. And we will be back very shortly with Final Destination 2, as well as a continuation of watching with hindsight the Westworld first season. So with that, we will see you soon. We got guns. Killing strangers. We're killing strangers. We're killing strangers so we don't kill the ones who matter. We're killing strangers. We got guns. We're killing strangers. We got guns. We're killing strangers so we got guns.